FM 104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Online, edleysbbq.com. Looking at Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. Jonathan Schaefer in for David Reed, who was in a car accident this morning and is in the ER. Things are okay through initial testing. We'll keep everybody updated on that at David Reed Radio if you'd like to send him a message on Twitter. His wife Lindsay have been keeping us updated on everything going on there. We are about to get an update from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel momentarily on the week of practice as they prepare for the 0-2 Minnesota Vikings on Sunday. And coming up at 11:15, we will hear from Titans left tackle Taylor Lewan. It's been a few months since Taylor's been on the show. In fact, the last time he was on, he cold called the show. I forgot what we were talking about, but it wasn't that entertaining to Taylor. And he felt the need to call in and bring a little energy.
He felt we needed an injection of energy. Not the type of injection that Tyrod Taylor received that punctured his lung, but an injection of energy into the show. So he called in and provided that energy. We appreciated it.
So in listening to Schefter describe that, the needle itself had to be pretty long to puncture the lung, right? Like it was they were going to numb two cracked ribs. That's what they were trying to do. And it hurts my chest thinking about it.
So I've had a spinal tap done before when I had meningitis. I've seen how long those needles can get.
Yeah.
When they're going into your spine for something and trying to test you. I'm imagining that type of needle being used to go in that could puncture a lung, right? Like it's got to be a pretty long needle that would be able to do that. This is not your typical syringe needle in an injection that you would normally see. It's a crazy story.
Oh, and then the cameras were following him during warmups. You know, he's sitting on the bench. He's like bent over. You can tell he's in pain, having trouble breathing at times. And you're like, what's going on? And he finally walks off under his own power. They take him into the tunnel, and you can tell that he's done. And Justin Herbert goes out and plays really well. But then after the game, Anthony Lynn's like, yeah, Herbert's a backup for a reason. We're going back with Tyrod Taylor. He said that on Monday, and then by Tuesday afternoon, the real report came out saying that Herbert was again going to start because Taylor hadn't been cleared by medical personnel. Assuming different medical personnel.
I thought Herbert looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did play well.
For a guy in his first start and under bad circumstances to have a chance against Kansas City, I thought he looked pretty good at times. I mean, I don't know. It felt weird because they immediately went back to, well, he's not ready. And then this happens. Like, well, I guess now he's got to be ready. It's a strange story all around.
Titans and Vikings this Sunday up in Minnesota. You can hear full coverage right here on Titans Radio on Sunday. Kickoff at 12:02.
Speaking of strange stories all around, Vanderbilt University tweeted out this $100 million excellence initiative to recruit new faculty over the next 2 to 4 years. The first response to it on Twitter was from Will Perdue, verified Will Perdue, former Vanderbilt star account, with a check mark. And it says, excuse me, Vanderbilt, this is important, but you're telling every current and former athlete that you, in all caps, don't care about us. The facilities are just fine, and we're not a priority. There's no money, etc. We are a part of this university. Stop treating us like bleep, with exclamation points at the end, from Will Perdue.
Wow.
Will Perdue off the top rope at Vanderbilt with that. There's a lot of athletic alumni that are just fed up. They have been for a while, but now they've just reached their breaking point. For Will Perdue, an NBA analyst, to respond publicly on Twitter to his alma mater with that, that's not good for the alma mater.
How many of their, you know, athletic alumni are coming to bat for them, so to speak, that are actually taking up for the issues going on? I can't think of one.
Well, we had Jordan Rogers come on this
Jordan
show.
Jordan Rogers.
He's a pretty high-profile Vanderbilt athletic alum, and he blasted the administration. at Vanderbilt. And this was after the new AD was hired.
Right.
We had him on the day that, Malcolm Turner was let go and Candace Story Lee was the interim.
Yeah, and, you know, the new chancellor says that they have a commitment to athletics. And while I want to say that's great, you know, it's great to hear that, the time for talking is over with all of this. Because we've reached a point, Chad, where it just goes in one ear and out the other with Vanderbilt athletics. It's one of those believe it when I see it type things. And everyone there, it's hard to be in a position of feeling like you have any power because you're really not allowed to do anything with it.
Well, and it's they're not even really saying the right things anymore. If you know what I mean. For years they said the right things about it. Sometimes they say the right things, but it's almost like they're and Godfrey talked about this. It's a clear effort to try to evaluate what they want to be. And quite frankly, I don't know that an SEC football program is really what they want to be in the long run. I don't know what they're going to decide when they get back to this. It's a very odd place to be in right now.
Program, but I think it's an SEC member is what they want to be.
They want the checks.
Right.
They want the
money
associated with that. They want to continue to have a dominant baseball program. They want their basketball program to be better. But are they really wanting to take the steps to be a competitive SEC football program? I mean, could you have your first non-football playing member of the SEC at some point? This is not ridiculous, what I'm throwing out, by the way. They can hardly get their players to want to go and play on Saturdays right now. They're having a record number of opt-outs for this season. They're not even thinking about fans because they don't have fans that want to go to their games or their stadium.
Well, like
at some point, they're going to have to crap or get off the pot when it comes to what they're going to do with football.
But imagine being now imagine being that, you know, the head coach of Vanderbilt right now and being Derek Mason and looking around and thinking, okay, where is the support that I continue to be told is here? And it's not here.
Well,
you know, we have a change at up top with our athletic director, but does that really change the course and the direction of where we're headed?
If Derek Mason doesn't feel
things... Can Story Lee do anything?
If things aren't changing for the better with Vanderbilt, Derek Mason needs to go be a coordinator somewhere after this year and needs to get out. He tried to get out to Colorado to be a head coach, but I think he needs to lower his goal. It's not going to be a head coach after you go 0-10 this year, but you could get hired by a good program to be a defensive coordinator if you're Derek Mason. Again, I can't make decisions for him, but if he truly believes that deep down, that it's not changing and that a commitment is not being made, he would be wise to further his career somewhere else as an assistant at that point. I guess his decision and then what we see from Vanderbilt moving forward, we're going to know what the new chancellor, what the new athletic director, what their plans actually, it's not just about plans too, it's action, putting those plans to action with the athletic department. We're going to know soon enough.
We're not that far removed, Chad, from a competitive Vanderbilt team week in and week out, right?
Well, it feels like a fluke.
The Titans have certainly been competitive to begin the season, and Mike Vrabel is now with the media.
I'd say that'd be similar to Darrington. I'd like to see him out there and then see where we can put him.
Mike, on the Isaiah Wilson front, he's obviously still on the COVID list. I think time-wise, he's eligible to come on. Can you give us an update on where he is?
He's still on the COVID list.
Eric?
Hey, Mike. Buck actually took my question. So I see you're in your office there. I'm just curious. You know, I see memorabilia photos, that sort of thing. Do you have a prized possession in there or something that maybe means more to you than the rest?
And this TV that I watch film on. That'd be at the top of the list there.
All right. One last call for any others? Not seeing any. We will call it a day. Thank you, Coach.
Great job. Hey, guys, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
media that wants to see Darrington Evans back on the practice field today. I saw a brief video of him yesterday, Chad. It looks like that hammy is behind him.
What in the world just happened? Was that a two-minute press conference, or did we join it late?
Part of it was technical issues on my side.
On the link. Say that again, Chafe.
Part of it was a technical issue on my side with the link, so we got to it late.
Yeah, gotcha. I think the link finally worked for us, is what happened there.
I was just very confused because those were some very short answers from Mike Vrabel. He had seemed to be – it appeared that he had had enough from the very beginning, if those were the first two questions that we heard. All right, I'm not seeing any more questions, so you guys are good to go. Maybe Paul can hop on here for a second and tell us what's happening.
I'm not sure he can. But Taylor Lewan will be joining us momentarily. The Titans left tackle will call in at 11:15. Chad, we will be live at Edley's Barbecue tomorrow in Sylvan Park.
Yes, we will. We'll have an announcement at 9 a.m. tomorrow from Edley's in Sylvan Park about how possibly you can win something from us for showing up when the doors open at 10 a.m. tomorrow. I'll save that announcement for 9 a.m., but we're excited about it. We'll have the Midday 180 cornhole boards out there. We'll be playing. So we'll be throwing some bags tomorrow in commercial breaks. Looking forward to a great day of barbecue and football talk as we get ready for the kickoff of SEC play on Saturday. Looking forward to it tomorrow. Come join us. Edley Sylvan Park. We'll be there from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We'll probably hang out for a little while afterward as well. But doors open at 10 a.m. tomorrow at Edley Sylvan Park.
Taylor Lewan next on 104.5 The Zone.
Get every Titans touchdown, interception, and hard hit right here on your home for Titans football. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Crew is all here today, and we're pumped that Taylor Lewan is joining us prior to today's practice. The last time he called the show, he cold called us because he was sitting in his truck and was so bored with whatever we were talking about that he had to bring the energy. Taylor, good to hear from you, man.
Boys, stoked that you guys brought a little juice today. Excited to be here. Excited for a good practice today. A little padded practice piece. How are we doing, fellas?
We're well. I think you've been upset with me since I reached out to you when I heard a hamburger conversation on your podcast, and I told you that matched whatever we were talking about in terms of being born.
Yeah, Paul, honestly, I couldn't hear you, which is probably a bonus if most people couldn't hear you also. I heard something about a cheeseburger, though. Obviously, you're probably referring to Bussin' with the Boys, which is a top 100 podcast in the world, which is just dominates anything Paul Carthew's ever done. But looking forward to this game, big game this week against the Vikings. Excited about it. Huge test for us as a team.
What's the juice like when your quarterback says "and one" while getting hit and throwing a touchdown pass?
I'll tell you what, it was pretty cool to hear him do that. I think I talked about it yesterday in the media. When that play happened, he threw it. I turned and looked at Tannehill. He was on the ground. He looked up. And I, instead of watching to see if the play was made, I just watched his face, and he just puts a little two-finger piece up and goes, "and one." I thought that was pretty badass, man. Sorry, make sure you get that little cursor thing on me. But it was awesome. It was very cool to see somebody with that kind of confidence, someone with that kind of toughness to sit in the pocket and throw the ball like that.
So run left is a mantra with this offensive line, and run the damn ball is also a mantra with this offensive line. Teams are starting to do some things to try to take that element away, but that has really not slowed you guys down because of the ability with Ryan Tannehill in the passing game. Like, at least early on, Taylor, to be a part of an offensive line, an offensive group that at least for now appears to be one where if you shut one thing off, you can always go to the other and you're not overly reliant on one facet of the game.
Yeah, I think, well, one thing that the coaches make sure we do and I think is the appropriate thing to do is when something's not going as well as we'd like it to. And I think all Titans fans wish we were back in playoff form the way we were running the ball before. But, teams have had another year to scout us and see what we've been doing. And, for the most part, I think Derek had as many yards in his third game, after his third game, than he does now. So I think we're trending in the right direction, but there's little things we need to take care of, man. There's small things that I know that I can definitely do to clean up, whether it's my hat placement in certain areas or, just my cutoffs and stuff like that. And then that goes for the rest of the offensive line too. We can all be a little bit better and to help that game go. We all know the talent that Derek has, but like you said, when the run game is going the way it is for Ryan to step up and slice guys up the way he has, it's been really cool to be a part of. And I think in turn, eventually that'll help the run game even more too. So complimentary football all across the board right now, which is pretty nice.
Taylor, from a mentality standpoint and a physicality standpoint, 95% of offensive linemen want to run the football. They enjoy trying to move guys out of the way for their running back and running the football. But obviously you have to pass in the NFL also. How versatile is this offensive line? I know what you guys want to do, but just man by man on that offensive line, how versatile have you become in terms of run and pass blocking?
Well, I mean, we get paid in this profession to do a certain thing. We're glorified security guards. And as a glorified security guard, you got to be able to do both. And, you know, I think our protection so far comparing last year and this year and recent years past has been a lot better. But like I said, there's so many things we can clean up from a versatility standpoint. To me, that's not versatility. That's just being able to play the game, right? You have to be able to run block and pass block. And, you know, the coaches put us in a situation as far as scheme goes to do well. But it's up to the players to execute it. As far as versatility goes, it'd be a guy like Ty Sombrello or Dennis Kelly or Jamil Douglas, guys that can go all up and down the line and play each position. I am a one-trick pony. If you put me anywhere else in the offensive line, I'm absolutely terrible. I'm trash. I'm a decent left tackle. And happy to do it, but those guys, to be able to go plug and play and do those, that's true versatility, and really lucky to have those guys on the team as well.
Titans left tackle and podcast darling Taylor Lewan, our guest. I thought you were good yesterday when you said, like, tweeting about no penalties was really a joke for you, and you were being funny about it. A lot of people picked up on that and ran with it. So I'm curious what you think, because we generally are not in the business of applauding people for doing what they're supposed to do. Should you get applause for not committing a penalty in two games when that's really what the expectation should be, right?
Yeah. You know, I don't think I should get applause for that. No, I think you're right. I think that's just me doing my job. It's a phase of my job that I haven't done in the past that I'm personally proud of, because to make a conscious effort the way it was going last year, Paul, you and I have had personal conversations about how my penalties were and stuff like that, and you knew how frustrated I was. So, you know, I Slim Shady myself, I M&M myself, 8-miled myself after the Kansas City game, and things gotten better from there. But, you know, penalties are going to come up. Those are things that are going to happen and you have to work through. Am I proud of myself for it? Yes, because I've never really done it before, and trying to be just as physical as I was. So, but as far as fans, there's no need to applaud. I'll applaud myself.
Taylor Lewan, our guest. So through 2 weeks, it seems like they're not calling holding penalties nearly as much as what they have been doing. Has there been a play where you turned around and didn't see a flag this year and thought, oh, maybe they are not calling holding penalties this year?
Not yet. No, I haven't had anything like, oh man, hope to God there's not a yellow flag behind me. Nothing like that. There definitely has been a few of those in the past, obviously, but so far this year, no. I think I've put myself in good position as far as like feet and hands and making sure I don't lean and put myself in a position to hold just yet. But I think, you know, in past, it really wasn't holdings that was killing me the most. It was more personal fouls, stupid stuff after the whistle, you know, fake tough guy stuff. So I'm happy to be trending in the right direction.
Might there be a moment where you're in trouble, where you're more likely to go grab outside or do whatever you need to do, where you think, hey, I'm less likely to get in trouble for this, and I need it. I need it right now.
I really don't know what you mean by that, Paul. Honestly, there are certain times where you're quickly in your head doing the process of pros and cons and seeing, hey, what's going to be better here, this hold or the sack. So that's definitely come up in the past. But like I said, it's been a clean first 2 weeks, but there's still so much more to work on. So it's an exciting feeling in this building because you don't feel maybe the recent years of complacency. This year, guys seem much more focused and understand that, you know, we got lucky in a couple things, and we need to keep growing if we want to be the team we want to be.
How weird is the in-house piped-in crowd noise? I mean, I feel like everyone asks you guys about playing in front of no fans, But I don't hear you talk a lot about what that noise is like coming from the speakers at NFL stadiums for the in-house crowd noise that's fake in the background as you play.
For me, I think I actually like it a little bit better than nothing at all. I don't know what they did this past week at home, but it definitely seemed like it wasn't as piped in as much as it was at Denver. When I went down in Denver for the knee thing, they cut the crowd noise off, and it kind of got eerie for a second. After, you know, the doctor's looking at me, I kind of look up, and I got the whole Denver bench looking at me. It's just dead quiet in there. And that was a little like, oh, this is way different. You know, at least people are usually talking amongst themselves or something. But, yeah, the crowd noise, I do enjoy having some of it. It is a nice white noise. Instead of just like this quiet, like empty stadium, it's kind of an eerie feeling when it's totally dead quiet.
We didn't get a chance to ask you about that knee. Was there a big worry there for a minute while you were down?
When I first did it, yeah, there was. I had a big worry, and then you know, I could probably be a little dramatic sometimes. So once I figured out that everything was fine, I felt a lot better about going back in and felt good. We have a great training staff, so they were confident that I was going to be all right.
Is it tough to hear the whistles, those mechanical whistles that you're using now?
No, not really, because we use those in practice. So, you know, they got like three different settings on there. You know, Frank, our strength coach, he likes to have fun with them, doing little tricks and stuff. Vrabel has a good time doing it too. So we've gotten used to that in camp.
How would you describe the battles with Ngakoue in Jacksonville? And does he still, I haven't watched much of him in Minnesota, does he still line up primarily on your side?
For the most part, he'll line up on me. He does line up on both left and right side. But a very effective pass rusher. He's got a great chop swim move that is direct beeline to the quarterback. If you miss your punch, you're going to be in lots of trouble. So, I think he's a great football player. I think he did a great job at Jacksonville, and it seems like in past situations, especially this last game, he seemed like he was affecting the quarterback a little bit, finding his groove. So I definitely got my hands full this week for sure.
At the risk of making this about me for a minute, I want to talk about me and you. We had a tough conversation at the Port-a-John near the end of camp. Where I felt that you had underperformed in a Zoom, and you told me, and I'm not paraphrasing, I don't think, I don't need you anymore. And I approached you in the locker room to talk about these things. But I do think for things like Pro Bowl and All Pro, and maybe down the line, buddy, Hall of Fame, you will need me. And so I want to hash this out here and now. Like, what's your stance on me and the media? I know you're a huge podcast star, but I don't think that covers every base.
Yeah, so that's a great thing to bring up on the spot at 11:27 a.m. before I ever practice at noon. Paul, this is a perfect timing. For me, I have learned through process of elimination and growing up and getting older that there's a time and a place to be joking around when to be vanilla, when not to be vanilla. Now, if I'm vanilla all the time, it's like all work, no play, make Taylor a dull boy kind of thing. I get a little crazy, or I get a little shiny-esque, a little axe through the door piece. So for me, during the season, I focus week to week on who I have, what do I need to do. You know, the ups and downs of last year of having being suspended for four games, coming back, getting as many penalties as I did, and then overall cleaning it up towards the end, it was very frustrating and emotionally tolling on me, honestly. So for, you know, Pro Bowl, All Pros, Paul, I'd love your vote, baby. I'd love to get a vote out of you and all the boys over there at 104.5. But, you know, I think there's, like I said, there's a time and a place. So right now, when I'm at work, when I'm going through the mundane day-to-day, playing week-to-week, it's important for me to really focus in on what's important, and that's football. And once the offseason happens, if you want to do a podcast, the two of us, I'll come on your show. I love to joke around as much as possible because that's the time to have fun. That's the time to do it. It's just right now, it's a maturity or a growth that's important to me to make sure that my teammates, my coaches, and everybody upstairs know that I'm as focused as I can be during the season.
Notice, Paul, that he did not invite you on the bus. He said, I'll come on your show.
Oh yeah.
He did not say you could then come on his show.
You are not bus worthy, Paul, is what I heard with that last statement from Taylor. Not bus worthy.
I'm not more clear about it. I'll be more clear. Paul, if you need a boost in your ratings, I would love to come on your show and help you out. As far as we're concerned, we're fine where we're at. Thank you very much, though.
Also, I called Will Compton slow, and I'm sure I'm in the doghouse for that because they don't like honest criticism over there.
He's slow. He's slow and white. I mean, he's a try hard effort guy.
Taylor, appreciate it, man. Go get after practice, and we appreciate you bringing the energy today.
All right, fellas. Thank you so much.
All right.
Taylor Lewan has been our guest.
That was a lot of fun.
Headed to practice. A great answer, too, by the way, on the fly at 11:27 a.m.
It was a good answer.
He plays like he can't handle it, and then he handles it beautifully with aplomb.
It was perfect, yeah. I also love how he said that the knee issue, at first he thought it could have been serious, and he said, "And I'm a little dramatic." Yep. Perfect on that. Clay Travis is about to join us, presented by the Home Loan Expert and thehomeloanexpert.com with Ryan Kelly. And we'll talk some SEC and other big headlines momentarily. But a big thanks to Taylor Lewan for joining us, as we do say hello to Clay Travis from OutKick, who joins us each Thursday at this time. Clay, good to hear from you, man. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Great.
Good. Clay, I wanted to start with the Katie Nolan, Jason Whitlock beef, which has been quite entertaining for those following the two of them and the back and forth and the column from Whitlock on Maria Taylor at OutKick, followed by his response to Katie Nolan at OutKick as well. I said this yesterday. I don't know if I was having some sort of a fever dream, but didn't Katie Nolan shoot the OutKick, the coverage pilot that never aired at Fox Sports 1
the
with
lost
you?
Pilot.
Wasn't she a part of that?
No, that was Alex Curry, that never aired OutKick pilot that we did. I don't know. It's probably been 5 years ago now. But that was Alex Curry, who sometimes guest host for Lock It In, or Fox Bet Live, as it's now called. But no, it wasn't Katie.
Do you know Katie Nolan at all?
Yeah, I mean, I know most people in the media, at least somewhat. But you know, it's Jason Whitlock's column, and so what I told Whitlock when he came over was, I'm not hiring you to tell you what to write. And so, you know, we have conversations like any business partners would at times about his ideas and his opinions. And he'll ask me for feedback sometimes. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm not monitoring, you know, what opinions he has. And look, there are all different sorts of stuff up on OutKick now as we've grown that I don't necessarily personally agree with, right? Like the conclusion or the column or the or the tone or the take. And, you know, my job as I see it is not to, you know, as the owner of OutKick is not to tell people what they can and can't believe in and what they can and can't believe. And so the only thing that I believe I've ever told my writers, is when I started hiring, we were hiring during the coronavirus, and I said, hey, if you don't think sports should be played because of the coronavirus, you need to work somewhere else. Like, we're not going to be the website that is saying, oh my God, somebody tested positive, it's time to shut everything down. And other than that, you pretty much have free reign to take stories that you think make sense and that you think are compelling. So, you know, it's not uncommon for me to say, hey, see this story, this is something we need to have a take on, you know, things like that. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm not reading, you know, anything, honestly, hardly at all before it's published on the site.
Clay Travis from OutKick, our guest on the Midday 180. He's presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Is Tennessee-South Carolina the best football game in the SEC, just between the lines on Saturday?
Man, it's a good question. I think it's probably the most important for – I mean, look, you're only going to play 10 games. Every game of football is important, but – when you look at how tough both of their schedules are, Tennessee, I think, is a 3 or 3.5 point lead. If Tennessee can beat South Carolina Saturday, win that game, you should beat Missouri, who's going to be coming off a beatdown that they should take from Alabama. Missouri's not going to be very good. New head coach, all those things. And get to 2-0, which I think would theoretically give you a chance to kind of take a breather. I think we have to kind of recalibrate what our expectations are for a season, given the fact that you're playing 10 different SEC games. I can't speak for every Tennessee fan, but I'd be ecstatic if Tennessee went 6-4 this year, right? I mean, I think that would just be really, really good season. And I don't even think 5-5 would be that bad of a season when you look at how many different challenging games there are on the schedule. So, to me, I want Tennessee and hope that Tennessee is going to be 2-0 after the first two games of the season. I think Tennessee will beat Missouri, which means that that South Carolina, boy, it'd be nice to start off 1-0.
Clay, I know that you've commented on LeBron James and his no comment about the two L.A. County Sheriff's officers that were shot and the challenge made by the Sheriff's Department to LeBron James, and he gave that a no comment. How dangerous is it with the NBA and their willingness to take a number of stances but yet no comment other things that are going on? When you get into that game of playing politics and playing social issues but aren't willing to comment then at that point on every social issue out there, how dangerous of a game is the NBA playing with that? And what did you specifically make of LeBron James' no comment?
Well, first of all, at OutKick, we donated $10,000 to the fund to help catch, hopefully, whoever, if people haven't seen that video, the two L.A. cops just sitting in their car, somebody walked up and shot them. I know there were two cops shot yesterday in Louisville. The shootings of police this year are up 40% over last year. I think the number, unfortunately, is 43 deaths. 43 police officers have been killed in the line of duty this year. And I think it's crazy that LeBron James won't publicly condemn the shooting of two innocent police officers and the murder, frankly, of many other police officers in this country. I think one of the challenges that social media has brought to bear is people don't look at overall data and facts. They watch a 15 or 20 second video and decide that it's representative of what goes on every day in the country. And look, I'm not claiming that every police officer is perfect. They're human and they're imperfect like every radio host or writer or preacher or whatever profession you want to pick. Someone does. Everybody's imperfect who does those professions. But by and large, the vast majority of police are saving far, far more lives, black, white, Asian, Hispanic, than they are ever putting in danger. And so I think one of the challenges we get into is when you have what I think are, frankly, idiotic arguments to abolish the police or defund the police or whatever you want to say. First of all, hardly anybody believes that, right? People who live in any inner city neighborhoods are not in favor of that. People who live in suburban neighborhoods aren't in favor of it. People who live in rural neighborhoods aren't in favor of it. But it seems a lot of times like many people in the media are in favor of it. And in fact, what happens when you decrease the number of police, this is not rocket science, shootings and murders go up. And so I think when you're active like the NBA is in all these different political areas, it brings to bear and light the places where you are not active. And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with police, but I saw the other day where Rachel Nichols was mad at ESPN because they weren't honoring Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Well, I mean, what about you? But I don't tune into a basketball game for the NBA to be honoring any Supreme Court justice when they die. Look, I mean, I think it's appropriate for the United States when a Supreme Court justice or person of high standing in our government dies to fly flags at half mast. I think the federal government making that decision, but it's not like I tuned into the Braves game last night. Like, man, I wonder what the Braves are going to tell me about Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying. But that's kind of the universe that the NBA has created where people sit back and say, wait a minute, well, you're telling me that this person's life matters. Why doesn't that person's life matter? You know? And so I just think that this is the problem, right? This is the problem with not realizing that ultimately you are in an entertainment business. And there is a difference between people in their private lives having whatever political beliefs they want to embrace and spending as much money and time and energy and effort as they possibly want, and leagues deciding to wade into political discussion, right? Because if a Republican-appointed justice dies, is the NBA going to then have a perspective on that? I don't think that it is smart for leagues to go all in on politics, particularly when we're talking about a 50-50 public, right? Like, basically, every jurisdiction, by and large, is going to come down. It's going to be roughly 50-50 in the country. people are evenly divided. And if I'm in a business of trying to play football or basketball or hockey or whatever the sport is, I want 100% of people to like my product. I don't want to alienate them by doing things that have absolutely nothing to do with the sport itself, in terms of the entertainment. And the analogy I make is, like, if I go watch, I went and watched Tenet, right? I've been to movie theaters. I'm ready to get back to normal in my life. When I went and watched Tenet, I was like, oh, I want to see this Christopher Nolan movie. I'm really excited. I think he's really talented at making movies. But if the movie had begun with Christopher Nolan coming out and talking to me for 3 or 4 minutes about political beliefs that he had strongly held, and then it went into the movie, I'd be like, why don't I care what Christopher Nolan can advocate. I have no idea what his politics are, right? He can advocate for anything that he wants. But when I sit down to watch a movie, I just want to be entertained by the movie. I don't care about what the actors or actresses think about the larger world. I just want to watch a movie. And when I sit down to watch a basketball game or a football game, I just want to watch a basketball, football, hockey, baseball, whatever it is. And I think that's the vast majority of American sports fans. And people are turning off the NBA in record numbers. I mean, the NBA, look, good analogy for you that I think should get more attention. Every documentary about Michael Jordan and the 1990 Bulls has had more viewers than every NBA basketball game this year so far. Think about that for a minute. More people watched ESPN, a 20-plus-year-old documentary interview of Michael Jordan and a story about the 1990s-era Bulls than have watched any NBA playoff game this year. Why is that? I think it's because people have a strong nostalgia and joy that thinking about that era of 1990s Bulls represents when the Bulls were trying to appeal to everyone. And now we're in an era where it feels like athletes are lecturing you. Every television commercial that comes on is a lecture. And it's like, that's not the business that I signed up for. And I think that's why the NBA is hemorrhaging viewers.
You said something interesting about Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Twitter. I'll go there with Clay Travis when we come back.
Midday queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
3HL. It actually makes sense now. Just take a very late lunch and don't go back to work. Go ahead. Brent Doherty and Don Davenport encourage it. This afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. on 104.5 The Zone.
Day 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Looking at Jonathan Schaefer in for David Reed. Give an update on Reed coming up at noon today. Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet. And Paul Kuharski in the T-shirt. What are you showing us there, Paul, in Brentwood?
I was only stretching, but you saw my Yazoo Brew
there it is.
T-shirt. And this is my pajamas. I didn't get out of my pajamas today. You guys know I'm working on a couple of stories. I just posted the one about Ryan Fowler. You will remember the Ravenwood incident.
Yes. You know who else, I'm sure, goes upstairs to the home studio each morning early and very it's unlikely that he puts on anything but shorts? Clay Travis, who continues with us from Outkick. And, Paul, you wanted to kick things off this segment.
Yeah, I thought you had an interesting take on Ruth Bader Ginsburg after she died. Short of a terrorist attack, and I can't remember, maybe a natural disaster, you thought it was about the worst thing that could happen for our country, given the timing. Please expand.
Yeah, look, I just think, so I was Friday, I was at my five-year-old's turn. Sixth birthday party, right? So I put down my phone for a couple of hours by and large, and I was there. And when I picked it up, My phone had blown up, and it was people, you know, I mean, this is my legal background. Obviously, Supreme Court vacancies are something that lawyers talk about probably more than sort of civilians or people who aren't lawyers, whatever you want to classify it as, quote unquote, regular people. But they have become so incredibly contentious, those hearings and the entire process. And I think what I tweeted was sort of an assassination or a terror attack. I felt like, and I guess you could probably add natural disaster, a big one there. There's almost nothing worse that could happen to the country. And I think it's because what I believe we're ultimately going to have to do is I think that social media, and this is not a new thesis of mine, but I think that social media is destroying the fabric of the country. And this is something I've preached to you guys for a while. Like, I pretty much don't read my mentions. Right, I will share my opinion with my audience, and then you know, whatever 20,000 people might respond to it in a given day, whatever the number is, it's not valuable use of my time to see what people think about my opinion, right? And so, I think what is happening is people are adopting anecdotal-driven worldviews, and it's important for you to realize whatever you believe. There is a video that both supports and contradicts everything that you believe in your life, right? There are 330 million people in America. So if you believe all cops are evil, there is a video of a cop being evil. If you believe that all cops are saints, there is a video of a cop being a saint, right? You can go and find whatever you are looking for, which is why we cannot allow the country to be anecdote-driven. And unfortunately, I think the media as a whole, and then being driven by social media, has become very anecdote-driven. And so as a result, I think that it has riven the levels of partisanship to an all-time high. And people are not behaving and responding rationally. And I think you throw in the coronavirus and election year and everything else, for the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it's just like more kindling on the fire that is going to lead to, I'm afraid, a large conflagration. I think November is going to be one of the wildest months in the history of this nation, and I think it may dwarf the wildness that we saw all the way through the start of the year. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg dying at this time is unfortunately, I think, going to add to that difficulty, because we're going to go through the confirmation process, the selection of a new Supreme Court justice. The Kavanaugh hearings in 2018 were an absolute kangaroo court, regardless of what your partisan politics are. And I would imagine that we're going to see the same thing happen in our U.S. Senate again during October and November and maybe on into December. And at some point, I think most people just want kind of a semblance of normalcy to return to life, and I'm not sure when that's going to happen. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg was just further evidence to me of what a disastrously divisive 2020 we have had so far.
Clay, Greg Sankey, SEC Commissioner, went on WJOX in Birmingham, a station you and I are very familiar with. He was asked about the transfer situation from SEC school to SEC school. Cade Mays at Tennessee, Joey Gatewood at Kentucky, a couple of the players affected by this. And he basically said, don't look at me. The SEC member schools voted on this. Those coaches know the rule. I don't know why they're accepting these players on their campus knowing the rule when they come over there. But in a year where the NCAA has granted eligibility to these players, and in a year where eligibility doesn't even matter for anyone, is it on Greg Sankey to eventually say it's okay for these players to play? Or should those schools just play those players and SEC rule in this, since the NCAA said it's okay?
It's a fascinating question. We're going to have Greg Sankey on Outkick tomorrow morning. For people who listen to The Zone, he'll be on at the 5 a.m. hour. I am so excited to have college football back that I understand like there's a lot of focus on individual players and whether they're going to be eligible or not. I frankly just have not dove enough into the difference between the NCAA and the SEC rule to be able to be an expert on, you know, the intricacies of that question, right? And so I And my general rule, my general proposition would be I want as many kids to be able to play as possible, right? That's why I've been fighting as hard as I have for the Big Ten to play, SEC, you know, every sport I want to play. And as part of that, I would want as many kids in high school and everywhere else to play too. But I'm not enough of an expert in the intricacies of those rules to be able to explain why or how they're being implemented. And what I would just say in general is if there is someone in favor of something and there's a rule against that, there's probably quite a few people opposed to it too. So I'm not trying to dodge the question. When I'm not privy to all of the details on it, I don't really know. My general position is I want everybody to play, but I'm just not enough of a knowledgeable person on the difference between the SEC and the NCAA rule to explain what should happen in these situations.
What's your top Vegas play for the SEC's opening weekend?
I got a bunch of them. You know, I like the under in Tennessee, South Carolina. It's probably my top play. I think Will Muschamp and Jeremy Pruitt have had months to get ready. Both of them are defensive first head coaches. I don't think that Pruitt, even though Jared Garantano has been there forever, feels a lot of faith in Jared Garantano. Certainly South Carolina is going to be breaking in a new quarterback. I don't think Will Muschamp is going to be trying a lot with him. Love the under there. I like Kentucky. I like a lot of the underdogs, honestly, because I like Kentucky. I like Arkansas. Both those guys getting, you know, 26 for Arkansas, 7.5 for Kentucky. I like Mike Leach and Mississippi State on the road against LSU in the vicinity of a 17-point underdog. The only big favorite I'm playing is Bama. I think Bama will roll in a big way over Missouri because I think, can you imagine, not only have you had to deal with Nick Saban, you've had to deal with Nick Saban during the coronavirus. I would imagine those Alabama players are ready to just rip heads off and, you know, legs and arms off and swing them around like weapons. So I wouldn't want to be Missouri lining up against Alabama this week. Remember, seems like forever ago, the last time Alabama played was a loss to, crazily, was that loss to Auburn, which feels like it was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, that does feel like a long time ago. Clay, we look forward to chatting more SEC football with you next week. On the way out, tell us about the Home Loan Expert.
Yeah, I was just saying, I know that it's going to feel good to be fired up about an officiating controversy for a change in SEC football come Monday, as opposed to the question of whether or not they're going to play. I kind of long for officiating controversy now. Look, you need to save a bundle right now. Best way to save a bundle is to cut, for most people, your mortgage rate, whether it's 15-year, 30-year rate. They have never been lower in most of our lives. You need to save hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. Why not get hooked up now at thehomeloanexpert.com?
Week 3, and the Titans find themselves in the Twin Cities for a showdown against Kirk Cousins and the Minnesota Vikings. Mike Keith and Coach Dave McGinnis have the call. Kickoff is Sunday at noon on your home for Titans football, 104.5 The Zone.